Chapter 10, Uriel. January 7th, Mirth. Janus turned the hefty stone block in his hand and sighed. It was solid granite with letters and simple, meaningless designs carved on the sides and a large W or M carved on top. The only thing of which he was certain was that L. Janus believed it was necessary. He felt as though he was letting everyone down again. They sat down with Saif, Uriel, and three of the gods to try to learn what the previous heroes who had acquired all seven talismans had done. Venus refused to leave her hot tub. The heroes were primarily interested in tactics they might use to help steal the talismans. Janus, however, wanted to know why their predecessors hadn't fulfilled the prophecy. The heroes were disappointed with the answers because the gods and the dragons typically only met the heroes after they had most of the talismans. The answer to Janus's question was a single word, simultaneously grunted by both dragons and all three gods. Janus. The dragons' answers were also intimidating. The dragons had memories going back over 8,000 years. They knew that heroes had attempted to fulfill the prophecy hundreds of times throughout those years. However, only three groups had managed to acquire all seven talismans. The heroes suddenly felt like they had been stabbed in the gut. They had all felt the same giddiness about their fun little quest when their dreams had started. The girls had given up when they were captured, and Stavius's mission had changed to saving the girls and staying alive. Their attitude changed again when they stole two talismans and then two more. They had become confident that they would succeed in capturing the three remaining talismans with plans and alliances to attack Septumculus. Now they learned that while hundreds of heroes had attempted to fulfill the prophecy, none had ever succeeded. In fact, only about a dozen teams had ever acquired four talismans, and only three groups had ever captured the full set. Their quest seemed impossible. Janus felt even worse than the others. None of his predecessors had succeeded. The key, Janus's proper title, was not even involved the one time the magic motor was built. The consistent problem was that Janus was the person everyone relied upon to have answers, which neither he nor any of his predecessors knew. How was the key supposed to know what to do when even the dragons didn't know? Janus's friends were risking their lives to bring him the talismans, and it would be for nothing if he couldn't figure out what to do with these artifacts once they arrived. He felt nauseous. The dragons explained that the first group to successfully acquire all the talismans were from Egypt nearly 4,000 years ago. There Janus had no idea what to do with them, so he recommended that they bring them to the gods as offerings. The gods assured them that they didn't care about offerings. However, they could not explain what the Egyptians were supposed to do with the talismans. That was Janus's task. The Egyptian Janus decided that the gods were idiots, and his heroes agreed. He claimed they were false gods who had misinterpreted the prophecy. Egyptian Janus concluded that the objective was not to bring magic to Earth, but instead to bring the magic of the gods they worshipped back on Earth here. He instructed his people to construct a vast temple shaped like a pyramid to house the talismans as a beacon. Their gods never arrived, but Janus and his team did manage to become very wealthy and powerful here on Mirth. That lasted for about 10 years until they were attacked and destroyed by a rival kingdom. The temple, talismans, and city were all destroyed when the invaders removed the talismans without proper precautions. The combined blast of seven simultaneously exploding talismans obliterated everything for 100 miles in every direction, and no Egyptian hero ever arrived on Mirth again. The next group of heroes to capture all the talismans was a group of Romans over 1,000 years later. By this time, all of us, gods, dragons, and humans, were completely confused with all the heroes and keys having the same names. Mars groaned that his brain hurt from trying to keep everyone straight and asked if they could use other names for the characters. Saif offered that they remembered the Traveler's Earth names and that everyone pleaded with her to use them. The Earth name for the Roman Mars was Gaius. Terra was Caecilia, Venus was Valicia, and Luna was Lolia. Saturn quickly asked whether Saif remembered their last names, and she glared at them. She sighed. The only ones I remember are Mars and Janus. Mars' full Earth name was Gaius Julius, and Janus' proper name was Gnaeus Pompeius. I'm sorry, I can't remember the girls' names, but you try remembering the name of someone you met 2,500 years ago. Saturn complained, why is everybody always related to someone famous? Safe growled at him, I don't know whether any of them were famous. They came over here as kids, like you. Saturn became pale and cowered in the corner from the intensity of Safe's response. Mars added, yeah, and I do remember those guys. Gaius and Gnaeus were awesome military leaders. Luna agreed. They were impressive. Too bad Gnaeus was more interested in military conquest than in fulfilling the prophecy. Safe explained that they didn't even bother to try and fulfill the prophecy. They acquired the talismans by building a massive army and conquering the people who created those relics. Gaius and Gnaeus recognized the combined power of the talismans. They did not view them as offerings to the gods like the Egyptians. This group used the talisman's energy to power their already mighty army. Gaius proclaimed himself to be King Mars, with Gnaeus as his consul and Cassilia, Lolia, and Valicia as his generals. They conquered everyone in their magic well and used the talismans as anchors to extend the well and expand their domain. King Mars built an empire which he ruled for over 30 years. Then, he unexpectedly died in his sleep, and his empire was thrown into chaos. Gnaeus had died 4 years earlier, and Mars had not named a successor. His generals began fighting for leadership, and the empire was thrown into a civil war. The talismans were either lost or destroyed in the fighting. All evidence of this mighty civilization disappeared within 100 years. Goddess Terra grumbled about how Gnaeus should have done his job as the key instead of being so greedy. She lamented how the gods could have retired thousands of years ago. Mars and Luna agreed, but still maintained that those guys were the most amazing military leaders ever. Narayana whispered to Stavius, I wish we had them with us when we attacked Septumculus. And Stavius agreed. Alisa saw Saturn gnawing on his fingernails in the corner and asked what was bothering him. Saturn looked up and said, well, if what Safe says is true, then we are part of an impressive crowd. On Earth, the boy named Gnaeus Pompeius was later called Pompeius Magnus, or Pompey the Great. Gaius Julius grew up to be a man named Julius Caesar. They were two of the greatest military leaders ever. The two of them formed an alliance for many years, which expanded the Roman Republic. As you know, Julius Caesar was assassinated by a group of Roman senators, so yes, his death here would be unexpected. Even Mark, Stavius's Earth half, who hated history, knew the story of Julius Caesar. He felt goosebumps rise on his arms and saw the rest of his friends shivering as well. Stavius said, but I thought Julius was his first name. Narayana threw a clod of mud at him while Versera groaned, Stavius, you are such a dork. Don't you pay any attention in Latin class? Julius was his last name. Caesar means king. Stavius admitted, well, I did always think that Julius was kind of a girly name. And Gaius isn't? Laughed Rosera. Stavius grinned and admitted, well, it does kind of make me feel better about being named Marius. Narayana interrupted to say, guys, this is all fun, but can we get back on topic? I want to hear about the third group. After all, they're the ones who almost made it work. They stopped chattering and turned to look at Safe. She said, I think that Uriel should explain this one. She has the best memories since her mother is from England and knew their Mars. Elisa couldn't help exclaiming, but if Mark's theory is right, that had to be 1,500 years ago. How long do dragons live? Safe coughed and appeared to blush as she deferred to her mother-in-law to explain. Uriel thought for several minutes before answering, well, it is difficult to give a definitive answer to that. Male dragons spend most of their lives living alone. They are often killed in some sort of fight or gardening accident before they reach 1,000. Gardening accident? Asked Rosera in surprise. Uriel said, don't ask, dear. Men get very competitive with their gardens, and they challenge each other to build and live in gardens which become outrageous the longer they live. Don't forget the whole extreme gardening fad that reappears every few centuries, added Safe.
She's right, agreed Uriel. Death by gardening accident is much more common than you might think for men. Women, of course, don't do such nonsense. We don't generally discuss our age. However, we typically live for about 1600 years. It is, however, hard to determine when a dragon dies of old age.
She saw the confused looks on the humans' faces and sighed.
You see, even young dragons spend most of their time sitting on their nests, absorbing magical energy and thinking. It's why we are so wise and can remember so much.
Uriel seemed pleased with her explanation, but Safe saw that the humans still appeared confused. Safe said, "We tend to spend more and more of our time nesting as we age." Uriel added with a grunt,
"Except for when we are required to host family gatherings."
And everyone chuckled. She continued,
"Older dragons will often spend decades nesting. They achieve a meditative state where they don't require food and live off the magical energy in their nests. These trances can become longer and longer, especially after age 1300, and can last hundreds of years. At some point, the trance becomes permanent and they die. Still, it is terribly difficult to tell the difference between a deep, multi-century trance and death."
"So what happens?" asked Elisa. "Do you bury them or something?"
"Oh, heavens no, child," laughed Uriel. "We leave them alone, except for occasional visits to their rooms to pay our respects and to dust them. We have several generations nesting in the back of the cave, and I'm not sure which are nesting and which have passed."
"Wait, that's gross," complained Versera. "Are you saying that there are dead and dying dragons lying in rooms at the back of this cavern? And that you warehouse your aging parents in rooms and only occasionally visit to say hello and dust them?"
"That sounds cruel," agreed Narayana.
"It's not cruel, it's just part of life, and they seem happy. Besides, geriatric dragons are generally confused and unhappy for the short periods they are awake. They have difficulty distinguishing between their trance thoughts and the real world, which makes conversations almost impossible. Senior dragons get irritable and complain that we are embarrassments because we can't remember the dreams they had. We politely nod, tell them about their great-grandkids, give them something to eat, and tuck them back into their nests. Why? What do you do with your old people?"
For Sarah thought about her grandfather, who suffered from dementia and lived in a full-care geriatric facility. Nurses had to feed and bathe him. He didn't recognize any of his family, but she felt guilty about not wanting to visit. She admitted, "Well, maybe we aren't that much different, but we can tell when people die, and we don't keep the dead bodies in our houses." Janice decided the conversation had become too morbid for him and said, "So, you are saying that your mother knew the heroes who almost fulfilled the prophecy. What did they do?" Janice was not usually the sensitive member of the team, but there was a combined sigh of relief after his request. Everyone leaned in to hear about these ancient English heroes. Then he added, "I especially want to hear about how their Janice created the portal." Everyone groaned. It appeared that Janice was still only thinking about himself.
"Well, it turns out that Janice wasn't the one who determined what to do with the talismans," explained Uriel.
The expression of shock on Janice's face made everyone else stifle a laugh. Narayana couldn't hold hers, and it blew out her nose. Suddenly, everyone except Janice was laughing. Janice was furious. "Fine," he yelled. "Everyone keeps saying that I'm the key and that I'm the one who's supposed to know how to solve this riddle, but I don't, and I'm not alone. Every Janice in history has failed, and I bet that every single one of them felt the same way I feel. You heroes get all the fame and glory, but it always comes down to a Janice taking the blame. Why don't you just go and figure all this out yourselves?" Janice could barely see from his anger as he stood up to leave, but Stavius grabbed him in a bear hug and said, "No, dude, we're sorry. We can't do this without you. I don't know if you'll be able to figure it out or not, but you are the only one who has a chance. We need you, buddy." Janice squirmed out of his embrace and stepped back to stare at his friend, but he didn't leave. Then Stavius grinned and added,
But the expression on your face was classic, man. It was like the instant someone slips on a banana peel. You were so ready to hear how one of your predecessors saved the day, finally, and wham, you were smacked in the face with a pie.
Janice pushed him away and shouted, "You have no idea how this feels to me. I want to be a part of this. I should be a part of this, but I'm not. It's always the heroes and Janice and never the five of us. It is so unfair. It just isn't right."
He turned to leave, but the three girls blocked his path.
"You're right, Janice," said Elisa. "Keys aren't considered to be heroes, but you aren't merely the key. The key would have stayed in the cave while his heroes went on their quest, but you came after us."
Versera said, "That's right. You stole one of the talismans and played a critical role in getting the rest. That's not something the key is supposed to do. You are one of us."
Narion added, "I think that Janice is right. He is a part of this team, and we should recognize that. I don't care what the prophecy calls us. I propose that in the future we call Janice a hero. After all, he already is one." She stepped forward and reached out for Janice's hand. The rest huddled around him as well, and for the first time, he felt like a full member of the team. He felt like, just maybe, he really was a hero. Saturn started to say, "Hey, what about us? We aren't even mentioned in any of these stories." But Ops elbowed him in the side before he finished. Janice shook them off, wiped his eye with his sleeve, and asked, "So, if Janice didn't solve it, who did?" Uriel answered, "Maz was the one who figured it out, but it's complicated." Everyone except Stavius groaned. It was Stavius's turn to wear a shocked expression. Janice laughed for the first time in days. "Okay, man, now that I'm a hero, it's your turn to be the key."